The Angry Chicken is a production of Amove TV. Bookmark amove.tv for more gaming and esports shows. The Angry Chicken is directly supported by listeners like you via patreon.com/TAC.
A podcast about Hearthstone, Heroes of Warcraft. This is the Angry Chicken.
Greetings and welcome, everyone. TAC is back. I'm Garrett, here as always with Jocelyn. And boy, is there a lot of Hearthstone to talk about today. Is it gonna end, Jocelyn? Is there gonna be a point where we hit an episode of the Angry Chicken and we just go, oh, well, this was relieving. There was no major earth-shattering changes in the last week. I actually got a chance to kind of figure out and make peace with a deck that I like. When is that gonna happen? This is not a complaint,
I don't think that's going to happen. I do not think that is in the cards for Hearthstone going forward at all.
I see.
Especially
what you did there.
Now that we've got Battlegrounds and we know there's yet another mode coming at some point this year. I think that there just is always going to be something, which is awesome.
It's a brave new Hearthstone world we find ourselves in. And we find ourselves in a brave new Hearthstone world literally every week right now. Every moment, whether we're winning, whether we're losing, things are constantly changing. And I'm rather enjoying it, even though I think I have the worst win rate I've had in about a year at the moment.
Yeah.
Because I don't know.
I'm not surprised with things changing so rapidly. It's really difficult to kind of nail down not only a deck that you like to play, but something that works really well. Because, I mean, we've had changes like every week since the new expansion launch. So that's something we haven't ever seen before. So things still haven't really like settled. And I think until that happens that everybody's win rates are going to be all over the place.
Yeah.
Demon Hunter, then, you know,
I disagree. I tried to scumbag it as a Demon Hunter this week and I have lost every single Demon Hunter game I played this week. Now I haven't played that many games of Demon Hunter, but the patch hit and I was like, let me see how this works. And I was like, oh, poorly is the answer to that question. Which now that we've actually got some stats to look at, turns out it's not that bad. Still considered to be a tier one deck, by our favorite, statistics website, HS Replay. But my personal experience was, oh, when you draw poorly, now you can actually lose as a Demon Hunter as opposed to win slower.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's definitely true.
Yes. Yes. So but what have you been up to before we get into nitty gritty and talk about nerfs and a buff and then go into Battlegrounds to also talk about nerfs? What does your Hearthstone world look like?
Well, I made it up into Diamond, but I did have to stop my conceding against Demon Hunter strategy because though I get super tilted when I play against them, I was facing so many that there was no hope of climbing. Should I just concede to everyone?
God. So. Oh, good. The player base of Hearthstone got my memo. I didn't tell you this, but I emailed everyone who plays Hearthstone. And I said, listen, folks, we need to teach Jocelyn a lesson here. You can't just concede against classes that you don't like playing against. So everyone, literally everyone, play Demon Hunter until Jocelyn learns her lesson. And it worked. So you're welcome, Jocelyn.
Yeah. I had at one point, even after the patch, I think yesterday, I tried to go back to ladder and play again because you were like, oh, no, the, you know, changes, blah, 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 patch, Demon Hunter, blah. And I was like, OK, fine. You know, maybe there's other classes being played now and I can go give ladder a try. And I still had 75% Demon Hunters. And I was just like, oh.
Yes. So,
you know, and I whatever. Had a, it is
like,
what it is.
We had a really like serious like. Like friend to friend conversation about how like I was like, oh, you seem like you're not having a great time and I wanted to talk to you about it. And we went back and forth and then the patch hit and I went and played some Demon Hunter games and I reported back to you. I said, Joss, I'm sucking eggs as a Demon Hunter right now. It is not working. You should get out there. Also, I haven't actually gone against another Demon Hunter all day. I saw actually more mages than anything else. Mm-hmm. Even though I didn't lose a single game during that short little session to see what things look like after the dust settled from that patch, I was still celebrating because I didn't see a single priest. And I am the way you feel about Demon Hunter, I currently feel about priest, and I feel like I felt about priest for a year now. Feels longer than a year, but I'm so over the priests. But I was, so for me, even though I was losing, at least I was losing against things that I found interesting to lose against. And also ran into my first secret rogue so far this expansion, which I'm surprised that I didn't run into one yet. But now, folks, you're probably going to see a lot more secret rogues.
And I mean, I will say it wasn't that I was losing against Demon Hunter. I just didn't find them fun to play against. And I found that when I did lose, they were just like horrible tilting. I couldn't have played any differently. There was nothing I could have done. And this just, and they didn't do anything special necessarily. And that just was so tilting.
Justin,
so
then, I really don't know what you're talking about because listen, they spent 6 mana. They drew 3 cards and those 3 cards got discounted by 3. Okay. They really had to hope and pray that expensive card that they haven't played all game eventually made it to the end of their hand because of course it did. They've had it in their game all hand because they didn't have 6 mana until now.
They've had it in their game all hand. Yeah, I know what you're saying.
I totally trailed off my story. The point was I talked this big game to you about how I personally hadn't won a game as Demon Hunter and hadn't seen a Demon Hunter in the course of like a 7 game session. And you're like, all right.
And we're at the same rank now, by the way, like we should mention, we're queuing in at the same time in the same region at the same rank.
Yep. But maybe not the same MMR because we'll never know that we can't be trusted with that information.
We are seeing vastly different class distributions, apparently.
The moral of the story is, everybody, the kicker is that I talked up a good game, convincing Jocelyn it was safe to hit ladder as someone who was shell-shocked by Demon Hunters, and you proceeded to run into nothing but Demon Hunters for your first 3 games. And I am sorry.
I won 2 out of 3, and it's not that I'm not winning. I just don't like playing those games. and this has led to, and I tweeted about this over the weekend. I did something, guys, for the first time ever in my Hearthstone career. I don't know if you're ever going to be able to forgive me, but I BM'd.
Oh, thank God you took my advice.
It was literally it had to be my 15th or 16th like Demon Hunter in a row. I was so just sick and tired of everything. And he got an absolutely crazy like nuts draw. And I ended up being able to, through randomly generated Hail Marys as mage, not die.
You could have just said mage.
Yeah,
you didn't need to specify because that's all they're doing right now is randomly generated Hail Marys.
I ended up with things that gave me armor. I ended up being able to just freeze everything for like 4 turns in a row, and then finally I fireballed him in the face after saying greetings. Which I mean, I didn't play all my other cards. That I guess would have been the actual like BM if I'd like played out every card but the fireball and then was like greetings and then BM'd. But just I said greetings in the last turn, you guys. And then I fireballed him and I just
give in to your hate.
Right, it felt so good in the moment. I was like, yes, because I've had so many of them BMing me.
Strike me down.
And that one Demon Hunter didn't necessarily do anything. I was just so mad at all Demon Hunters. I couldn't help it, guys. It felt so bad.
So, Jocelyn, all I'm hearing is that you really need a Maya of cosplay because you apparently are RPing Maya so well that I'm just truly, truly impressed. I gotta say, obviously we've had slightly more than 24 hours in the new patch. I'm pretty happy with it so far.
Yeah, I mean, it's too soon to tell for me. I mean, I haven't had a whole lot of time on the ladder since I've been playing. I love Battlegrounds. So that's kind of been my refuge from Demon Hunter, is I've just swapped over to Battlegrounds. I've been doing decently well over there. So it's kind of like boosted my confidence a little bit.
I love that Battlegrounds is there because I'm finally at a point where I thought I was going to reach, which is like when either I get tilted or bored with Hearthstone. More lately, it's been tilted. I'll be honest with you. I've been about as tilted as you have, Joss, just like, but not at Demon Hunter specifically, like at my own inability to play this game well. Like, I just can't decide on a deck to play. I'm not sticking with anything. I'm not learning the intricacies. And also to a certain degree, even if I did, it would probably change next week. But I like that. That's again not a complaint. I think things needed to be adjusted, and I'm really happy that they're getting adjusted. But anyway, with Battlegrounds, I thought I would eventually arrive at a place where I would either be burnout or tilted with ladder. And it would be nice to have something to go and play that keeps me in the Hearthstone ecosystem as someone who doesn't like Arena and could take or leave Tavern Brawl.
Mm-hmm.
So that Battlegrounds has 100% done that, without getting too deep into that. But like my TLDR on that is Battlegrounds hasn't had major updates in a little bit, probably the longest amount of time that at least it feels to me since it hit beta. And I legitimately thought I was going to play some Battlegrounds this week and be bored. And I wasn't. I had a really good time in Battlegrounds. And I even went out of my way to screen share it with a buddy of mine and be like, hey, man, you should start playing this. So we have like a nice 20-minute game to play.
Ooh.
This is like my Call of Duty buddy. I'm like, hey, man, Call of Duty has server maintenance too. When that's on maintenance, we should play some Battlegrounds. And I put on the screen share and he's like, this is a lot deeper than I thought it was. I'm like, yeah, right? You probably think, oh, Hearthstone does an auto battler. It's probably like my first auto battler. Nope. It's got layers. Wonderful, beautiful, nuanced layers. But we have a lot to talk about today. So
we do.
We should probably move along into it. We would, however, like to take just a moment and thank those of you supporting us over patreon.com/TAC. We have all kinds of perks for you, like access to our Angry Chicken Discord server for supporters over at the Patreon. So go check it out. And this week we'd like to thank Ocularis, Robert Lotero, and Spiff J-Bug for signing up and becoming patrons. We usually thank about three of you a week. We thank you in the order that you signed up. It's not necessarily the most recent. So if you haven't thanked you yet, don't worry. I have you in our to-be-thanked spreadsheet. I have a spreadsheet for this, y'all.
Yeah, we have a spreadsheet, guys.
Yeah, we keep track. You will be thanked. And I also just want to give an extra little thank you out to Spaceman Spiff, who upped their pledge this last week to a whopping $25. So thank you very much, Spaceman Spiff. I like that Spiff J-Bug and Spaceman Spiff both made a list this week. I hope they're friends.
They better be. They are now.
Y'all better.
You guys can meet in the tech community in the Discord or over on the Patreon page. There's lots of places you can talk now.
Y'all better connect.
We've just made you BFFs.
Yes, yes. The Anger Chicken, bringing people together since 2013? Is that how long we've been doing this?
I am forever.
I feel old.
Yeah.
But I also feel a great need to talk about the nerfs. So let's get into it. This week's Hearthstone news.
Good news, everyone.
Hearthstone has a new patch that went live on 4/20. Blaze it. That's what the Nailed cool kids it. Say. That's what the cool kids say. And with it came quite a few Demon Hunter nerfs, as well as other nerfs. Funny enough, a lot of the neutral nerfs, I feel, directly impacted Demon Hunter as well. But as well as I tease at the top of the show, one buff to a class that, in my opinion, direly needs it and probably needs more. let's get into it. Let's kind of kick things off talking about Demon Hunter. And I know there is a zero mana conversation that we need to have. But let's lead into it with the Demon Hunter nerf. So right off the bat, Battle Fiend, a target of both of our ire and the ire of many, many Hearthstone fans and people that say they're fans on Reddit. So Battle Fiend has gone from 2 attack, 2 health to 1 attack, 2 health. Still gains +1 attack when your hero attacks. Still only costs 1 mana. Still a demon. I guess that's about the only other thing you could have adjusted on this card. But yeah, losing 1 attack value going down to a 1/2. So not going to have 3 attack on turn 1 with the coin because you also hero powered and swung. This one feels okay. I like this one.
Yeah, I think this one did make a big difference. I found I was playing a bit of Rogue and just being, you know, hitting it when it has, you know, 1 attack or even 2 attack, you know, swinging into that twice doesn't feel nearly as bad as it did. Like before, swinging into that thing twice meant you were probably down below 20 health on like turn 3.
It hurt
a lot, and it doesn't seem like a lot, but when you like factor in the fact that it's probably going to hit you once and you're going to hit it twice, then, you know, like that's 3 damage basically that you've saved just by it starting at that lower value. So I think it's a really, really good change.
Yeah. And then Glaivebound Adept was adjusted as well, although and I think that this might be a common theme with the next two cards. I'm not sure in the way it needed to be. So it went from a 7/4 to a 6/4. They reduced the attack by 1. It still has the same battle cry. If your hero attack this turn, deal 4 damage and still costs 5 mana. This one's a little bit of a head scratcher for me, because to me, the power of Glaivebound Adept was never its attack value. I mean, it's nice. It doesn't hurt. But you know what still hurts? 6 attack. You know what hurts more and is more reliable? 4 attack wherever the hell you want it to go.
Yeah, yeah. And I think I can't remember if I actually said it on the show or if it was a conversation we were having off air, but either way, I think that with Demon Hunter, one of the things that feels so bad is they have a lot of these kind of powerful effects tied to if your hero attacked this turn. And the hero always attacks. Like, it feels like that, like, qualifier. I mean, unless you, like, you see people still getting used to the class and, like, messing up and, you know, attacking first or not, or playing this first and forgetting to attack or whatever. There are some potential order issues as people learn the class. But, I mean, I don't ever really see anybody just playing this out without getting the effect. And that kind of goes for a lot of the Demon Hunter cards that are based around attacking. And so I feel like they should just like remove the caveat because it never really comes into play.
Yeah. Yeah. And chat room's like, or freezing them. That's fine. But like, cool. Mage and
yeah.
Shaman, I guess. Good. There's two classes that can, you know, deal with this. It's yeah. Like if this said 6 mana, 6/4, deal 4 damage, you would play that minion. Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's some small caveats where this battle cry doesn't happen. And at the same time, it's almost like we need to start looking at all of the changes made to Demon Hunter, like in its own emo cornucopia. Because now we have lost a good amount of attack value kind of across the board, even though one of the changes we're going to talk about that has actually added attack value in, but they increase the mana, yada, 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 yada. But it's the kind of thing, like, to me, Glaivebound Adept was one of the cards that wasn't getting talked about enough. I thought it was a bit of a, like, the sleeper power of Demon Hunter, because that extra 4 damage in so many games put me up over the top or put my opponent up over the top. Because there's still a lot of guaranteed damage coming out of things like Priestess, of your own damn hero attack value, of Antane. Like, there's a lot of uninterruptible damage coming out of Demon Hunter, and you know, sometimes 4 damage is all you needed. And to me, Glaivebound Adept just looked like one of those sleepers. You know, we were all like, God, Priestess, this card, I'm so done. How is this a thing?
That's kind of the thing, though. Like, there were so many other things that kind of deserved a big old swat from the Nerf bat that Glaivebound Adept, like, if on its own, I think Glaivebound Adept would have been talked about, but in the Demon Hunter package, it was like, oh no, that needs a change. That needs a change. That's too powerful. That needs a change. And then like Glaivebound Adept was just like, if I just keep my head low, no one will talk about me because everyone's talking about that stupid warlock skull.
Which I'm still talking about personally.
Oh yeah. I understand. But that's what I mean. Like a Demon Hunter feels like they got maybe like 2 years worth of the absolute like best cards in a set. It's like they got all their good stuff all at once. And, you know, that hasn't happened for any other class. So there's a really high power level in that class right now. And I think they did it to make it viable. But yeah, maybe just swung a little bit too far in that direction.
Yeah. And you know, maybe this is okay. Again, if we look at like all of the changes, all of the nerfs that have hit Demon Hunter as a whole, like this is still better. It's a little bit less damage if you find yourself in the like extra bad scenario of not having a way to remove Gladebound Adept without using your face to do so it like it does all add up. The one attack from Battle Fiend, the one extra attack from Gladebound Adept, these are things that add up over the course of an entire game to possibly end extremely early. Now on to the Demon Hunter of the hour. Altruist the Outcast changed from a 3-mana 3/2 to a 4-mana 4/2.
Again,
I triple took this. It wasn't a double take. It was a triple take because I was like, how did they not to me, this is very personal take. How am I living in a reality where the card text on Altruist wasn't adjusted at all?
Yeah, and that's where my head went, because I mean, the fact that it was a 3-mana 3/2 was not really the problem. If anything, you know, making it a 4-mana, it maybe allows the Demon Hunter not to play as many spells in combo with it, except that the Demon Hunter has a lot of things that get discounted down to zero, whether that's through Skull or whether that's through Twin Slice just being zero, or, you know, cards being outcast. Like there's all kinds of things that change the cost of Demon Hunter cards. So like this hasn't really had a big impact. Like Altruist is still a ridiculously amazing card, and that's because of its card text. Like no one's playing it for a 4/2. It's basically the same thing I said about Albatross last week. Like its stat line was maybe a little bit too good for where it was. And I agree with the change we'll talk about in a minute, but you're playing that card for the text. You're playing that card to mess with Highlander decks. You're playing that card to give your opponent like just trash draws later on in the game. You're not playing it because of its stat line. So I think Altruist falls in that exact same category. You're not playing that card for the 3/2 or the 4/2. You're playing that card for the effect.
Correct. And again, like I feel the need like to add the caveat, like it doesn't hurt that it was increased by 1 mana, but like how many times have you found yourself like playing Altruist late in the game and mana not really being an issue, or comboing it with all the twin slices in the world, so mana was never an issue to begin with.
Yeah.
It's interesting. It's interesting, yeah. for sure. Celestia on chat room says, what if I told you the Altruist change was intended to let you still have those turns? Well,
those turns are stupid and dumb and I hate them and stop.
to me, I think this is where you and I agree the most in our in Demon Hunter ire, because overall, I am not even close to on the same page of being as tilted by them as you are. But I think Altruist is the single greatest defender, and this change doesn't address any of the issues with this card.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, I realize looking at Giftorfs in the mouth, I am an old Hearthstone man at this point. I am on my couch saying, back in my day, we were lucky to get one balance change a year and we liked it. So maybe this is just, this could be a part of that. Obviously, it sounds like from Slot in the chat room, that was not the case. Looks like it was very, 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 very much intentional. That doesn't change any of my takes on this. Like my reaction of, how stands.
Yeah. And I think that the biggest problem is that just the ability to combo him with so many different things. It's like the way Demon Hunter as a class just is where things become problematic. Like Altruist on his own is probably okay, but he doesn't exist in a vacuum. He exists in the Demon Hunter class. And that just feels really bad because you have a class that for a small amount of mana and a small amount of setup can basically go from a few cards in hand, play this guy out and end up with a board clear, a heck of a lot of face damage, because it's not just like a lot of the cards that you're using to combo with Altruist are also giving your Demon Hunter attack power. So you've got, you know, you're hitting the board, you're clearing the board, you're hitting face, you're doing a lot of face damage, and then you're swinging with your hero, doing more face damage. And also you haven't paid the penalty that a lot of other aggro decks have to pay, and that we saw Divine Favor get moved to the Hall of Fame for. And that's that you still end up with as many cards, if not more, as what you started with at the start of your big, huge combo turn. So you can play out, you know, like 6 to 10 cards in a turn and still have 6-ish cards on the backswing of that. And I think that's what is so frustrating, is that if I, as the counterplay, could set myself up, because there's times, like most of the time when I play against Demon Hunter, you know, like I have a decent board, I'm really happy with it, I'm in the mid 20s in my health, like I should be fine. And I end up with, you know, sub 10 health after their Altruist turn. So it's not even an OTK. And so, but there's no way to recover from it, because they have so many resources still in their hand that they usually just have another card that they're able to play out and kill me next turn. And it feels bad. It feels like there's nothing I can do as the opponent, regardless of, like, you know, building a board doesn't work. Like, the one thing you could maybe probably do is freeze the face. But if you do that, that means you're playing very, very specific classes, and that doesn't work for every class. So it just, yeah, it kind of... it just isn't great. And so, it happens way earlier in the turn than a lot of other OTK-ish style decks do, and doesn't require as much deck building or like workarounds or anything like that. Like, it just is the way Demon Hunter is, and I don't really like that.
Well, let's talk about two more cards. They are neutrals, but they do affect Demon Hunter. Maybe not the most popular deck, but still does affect the class, and that's Kael'thas and Frenzied Fellwing. Before we get into, because on the subject of Altruist, and also a little bit these two cards, we start to get into the zero mana issue that I know we both want to talk about. So Kael'thas had his mana increased by one, very much for me, basically the, like, copy paste my take from Altruist. To me, the power of the card text is the issue, and not necessarily how much mana Kael'thas is costing. Again, doesn't hurt. It's something, but it's not the kind of thing that I go, oh, cool. Well, I'm not going to get blown out by OTK Demon Hunter anymore. Still a possibility. And then Frenzied Fellwing had its health value reduced by one. Went from a 4-mana 3-3 to a 4-mana 3-2, which I rather like. Actually, of all of the kind of minute changes here, this one I really like, because, like, two health, that is a sweet spot right now for being able to deal with it across many classes.
Because so many classes are playing things to kill two health things because of... and, I mean, it did get changed, and I think it's in a better place now, but a lot of people were running... two damage removal because of Battle Fiend. Yeah. So, like, everyone was teching in that very specific removal. So now you're going to be able to target Fellwings with it too, which I think is really good.
There's also just a decent amount of removal to deal with two health minions in the first place. So it's like, apply all kinds of little takeaways about, hey, it's a little added bonus as to why Rogue is probably doing so well right now, because they've just been sitting on backstab their entire Hearthstone life.
Yeah.
And it's not a bad thing. And so that's where I start to, like, walk it back a little bit. Like when I look at individual cards that were changed, specifically Kael'thas and Altruist, it, like, by themselves, I go, boy, this seems to have missed a mark. But when you start to look at all these changes together, you know, one mana here, one health there, it does start to add up. And the stats reflect that. We are seeing Demon Hunter is now sharing the highest win rate in the game with at least two other classes. If you start to look at specific decks and not classes across the entire win rate of just the class, there's even more that are up to their level, if not above them, at least in the last 24 hours. Now, this is all, you know, like, one day take, but seems to have worked, and it was already starting to work after the first round of nerfs. That being said, you and I, we've had a lot of thoughts about zero mana cost cards. I know it's very much been on the forefront of your mind, because you're like, can we talk about this? Can we talk about zero cost cards? I'm like, I think you're onto something here. And it's not, like, disclaimer, we are not here to, like, do a takedown of zero cost cards. But we do want to have a conversation about like why some work and why some are problematic. And altruist buddy, sorry, but you're the poster child for why we're a little miffed with zero cost or cheap cards or spells at this exact moment in time. But he sent me, the second you brought it up, I thought about altruist, I thought about zero cost cards, and all of a sudden I went down a scumbag memory lane. So altruist is a problem because of how cheap and at times free Demon Hunter cards can be. And so he kind of compounds the issues that you and I have been talking about for weeks now about the Skull of Gul'dan.
Yeah. So Skull of Gul'dan is kind of interesting because it does just seem like a ridiculously powerful card, and you can Outcast is an interesting mechanic because it does involve you potentially playing cards in a suboptimal situation in order to get something to the left-hand side of your hand, right? So I'm not saying that there's absolutely nothing that the Demon Hunter has to do in order to outcast Skull of Gul'dan, but it seems like when I'm playing against them, there's never a big issue getting it to the, like, I never feel like they've misplayed in order to get the value out of Skull of Gul'dan. And then, so what you're getting out of Skull of Gul'dan then is either you are hitting cards that are extraordinarily powerful and getting a 3-mana discount on them, like your Priestess, or you're hitting some of your smaller cards. And in those cases, a lot of the times you'd be like, oh, but Joss, isn't that terrible? Because, you know, you're not getting the full value of the 3 discount. You know, if you've got a 2-cost card that goes down to 0, like you didn't get the full 3 reduction. But because that exists in a class that has access to altruist, then you end up with these turns where they can play altruist and then play out all of these different combo pieces because they have twin slice at 0 mana. And then potentially these discounted cards, including stuff like Fellwing, like there's just so many things that can be played for 0 mana. And then, you know, they're putting things on the board, they're drawing cards, they're doing XYZ, whatever. And it's not a bad outcome from that card, whereas in so many other situations and classes, you would want to get the full mana discount if of whatever play it is that you're making. But getting things down to 0, like you don't even feel bad when you discount a 1 or 2 mana card with Skull of Gul'dan. You're just like, sweet, I can play more stuff next turn with altruist. Yay.
Yeah, there's like not really a down. What is the worst feeling with Skull of Gul'dan?
The downside it should be.
The downside right now with Skull of Gul'dan is drawing Twin Slice.
Yes.
That's basically it. The worst the Skull of Gul'dan can do is draw both Twin Slices.
Yeah.
And it still drew one other card.
And the I-beam.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, want to hammer it home. Stats are looking pretty damn good. It's actually looking like we're reaching a pretty damn balanced level in terms of win rates across the board right now. Like, if anything, I'm looking at Secret Rogue in the last 24 hours going, I got my eye on you. You look a little strong right now. But we have also many times, and this has also come up in conversation, like from the devs, that the sensation of like how does it feel is actually important, whether it actually, because I love talking about, does it feel bad or is it is bad? Feel bad or is bad? Those are the two things.
Well, you bring up Rogue, and that's kind of an interesting comparison because Rogue can also do really crazy swing turns with, you know, cheap and 0 mana cards, and they can also draw a whole bunch of cards. They can do really powerful things. But what Rogue lacks and kind of has always lacked is something Demon Hunter does not lack, and that's healing. So, you know, if you're a Rogue and you're sitting there doing your super powerful things, you always have another eye on your health because your health is consistently going down as you make attacks with your weapon and as you, you know, take attacks from your opponent, whatever. And Demon Hunters, they don't care. They're like, yeah, sure, cut me up all you want. I'm just going to I-beam and or, you know, weapon and be back up to my full health again, which is often a lot of times what I see is that, you know, like, I'm dead. You've totally cleared my board and killed me, and you're back on full health again because you got a lifesteal weapon and you're constantly adding attack to your hero. Like, that's something that Rogue currently in Standard doesn't have as much ready access to. And that's kind of where my head is at with Demon Hunter, is that it doesn't seem to have the weaknesses. Like Aggro Paladin didn't have card draw and would end up with an empty hand. You know, Rogue can do super powerful things, but ends up with a really low health total and might just die. Demon Hunter doesn't have those problems.
They also have a lot of other routes if they end up having to use the Altruist just to clear board. Which this is kind of what I got into when I said that when you came to me during show prep and was like, hey, I think there's a conversation here about zero cost cards. And I immediately, my brain went history time. Cause I started thinking about other things that, have abused that. And so I wanted to talk about some of it and also maybe even expose a little bit of my biases with what I think feels bad in Hearthstone. So I was thinking about previous and some of these are even still currently playable in the game, kind of offenders of the danger of zero cost cards. And the first place my brain went when you said it was Rogue, because as I've mentioned multiple weeks, possibly months now, I can't believe Edwin didn't go to the Hall of Fame. I feel like
we've said that since Hall of Fame has existed, is like, how is the core of Rogue still there? Like, we have the conversation every time there's a world championship. It's just like, well, you know, there was a Rogue deck that won the world championship and it had insert Rogue package here that hasn't changed since the start of the game. Like,
And I'm not saying this is the worst offender in the history of Hearthstone. I'm just saying it is an example. Like,
because of
Shadow Step, because of Backstab, and because of the way Edwin works, the Shadow Step and Backstab being zero mana, you can really abuse that. And so there's a little peek into my own personal bias towards like what I think feels bad, because it's like, since 2013, I've been watching giant freaking Edwins come down off the back of Shadow Steps and Backstab combinations. Like, I'm at this point, I'm bored with it. In its defense, and in slight damning of Demon Hunter, it's not like Edwin has freaking charge. It's not like Edwin's like, it's not like they're backstabbing your face. They literally cannot. And now that Leroy's gone, it's not like they're Shadow Stepping Leroy. Although Shadow Step Leroy actually would have been a better example to throw up here. That was definitely a much larger offender, but this is the first thing that came to mind, because I'm still like looking at Edwin, even though now I'm playing Rogue and playing Edwin, thinking, boy, dude, you know, take a vacation. It's time. but that's, I think, an example of like why this is still around. Even though like I personally am bored with Edwin, the power level of the interaction between Rogue's zero mana spells and buffing an Edwin, it doesn't blow you out the turn that it happens. If you can't deal with the Edwin, then it's going to be a problem. But you at least have time to address that. Moonfire Malagos Druid was like another one that immediately popped into my brain. But
I feel like Moonfire Malagos is a little bit different. It's the kind of thing that's like always going to exist in Standard as a possible way for Druid to play. But because Malagos is so expensive, and if you want to cheat him out in any way, shape, or form, then you've got to build an entire deck around that, and you have to jump through some hoops. And even when you jump through those hoops, you're still looking at, you know, further down the line than some of the plays that we're seeing coming out of Demon Hunter right now. So it's the kind of thing that your opponent has time to like recognize what you're doing, to potentially play around that and, you know, like, and know what's coming, know what's happening, and kind of play their deck potentially differently around it. Like, there's room to play around Malagos Druid.
Yes.
Yeah. Moonfire Mali was a turn 14 plus play. Yeah.
Another massive bias for me. I hated playing against these decks. And probably like a top five for me for decks that feel the worst to lose against. Mm-hmm. Then there was also,
is that because you can see it coming the whole time and you just like can't,
and it's like you didn't find the pieces and you're just like, this is just, oh, I can see the inevitability of my situation.
Yeah.
And it's a tilting situation for me.
Because I think it's important that we talk about, you know, why we actually think this feels bad, not just that felt bad. Like,
yes. Yeah. No, that's important.
What is it about that deck that for you in particular made it not feel great to play against?
And again,
I never particularly minded Malagos Druid. I thought it was okay. I never played it, but I it didn't give me Demon Hunter feels.
It wasn't rampant enough. And if we're going to gonna compare things to the rampancy of Demon Hunter, it's going to be really hard to find. Like, it's like what Undertaker Hunter was like maybe the closest thing.
Maybe. Yeah.
So that's a really hard bar to clear. And also one that I do not begrudge the game or the game's designers. Like, it's a new class. And no matter what was going to happen, everyone and their mother was going to be playing Demon Hunter. My mom is a historical Illidan fan, so that's, you know, obviously going to happen there. But my mother has no idea who Illidan is. But this is where I don't know. This is where I find this interesting, because I don't just want to say, like you said, it feels bad, but the, like, you, Joss, are making me confront like my biases, like, and like like Malagos, Moonfire Druid hated losing against it, but was it really that bad? And honestly, no, it wasn't, because it was quite difficult to pull off. You could see it coming from a mile away. And Van Cleef, sick of it, but Big Edwins, you know, Shadow Step plus the freaking mana discount off of Shadow Step and Backstab. No, it's still fine. It works. It's something that has actually existed within a pretty, I think, healthy balance throughout the majority of Hearthstone's history. And then also things like you and I were talking before the show, Circle of Healing came up. So like that's combination with Morshire Cleric, Green Druid Blade Master. Those were noteworthy, but not game ending in some cases, or like the copying of your Sorcerer's Apprentices. So you could have four of them on board plus an Antonitis and have infinite free fireballs, which was, again, much like Malagos Druid, very difficult to pull off and something that you should sniff it out back when that was a deck that could be played. So
Like the one thing that outside of like Edwin, but the Antonitis and the Malagos combos, I think they took so much longer to get to. They required very specific deck building. It was like if you messed it up, then your deck didn't have a way to win. Like, this was your win condition. And I think that those spells are always going to potentially be problematic just because they ignore the main like resource of the game, right? They ignore mana completely. So you get to basically or potentially break turns because you're doing stuff when you shouldn't be allowed to do stuff anymore. So I think that, and I've said this with every new set that comes out that has a zero mana card, particularly ones that can deal damage and especially ones that can deal damage to face, those are always going to be scary and problematic because they could be used to make these crazy infinite combos depending on what other cards are available to the class. And so I think in a lot of cases, we've got zero mana cards that aren't problematic because the class doesn't have access to anything that is some sort of generation or like infinite value type combo card, right?
Thank you so much for setting me up, because I prepared a slide for this, Jocelyn. Oh no, it didn't save. No.
I was like, Hall of Fame? What? Libra, is that free?
So folks, I have a video audience. I've got a bunch of slides with the exact same file name, and I just save over them so I don't have to gouge my eyes out when I need to add 13 slides to my production software. Yeah, okay. I guess it's just gone. I lost it. Didn't save out of Photoshop. But so we'll just come here. We'll just come here for a second. I think there are basically everything we just talked about. I think we can agree on whether it felt bad or not, whether we liked it or we didn't like it. They were more or less balanced. They were either difficult to pull off or gave you enough warning to actually react to what was going on off the back of zero cost cards. But I think there were also, as you mentioned, just legitimately good examples of zero cost cards that have not really been problematic. Coin should be the very first thing we talk about. Coin just works. I don't think I've legitimately heard someone complain about Coin since the Hearthstone beta. And that was mostly because of Rogue. Like, that's about it. For Druid, Innervate comes to mind. Obviously, like post nerf, like Innervate has.
Yeah. Post nerf Innervate for sure. Yeah.
Celeste line in the chat
room. Which basically is just the coin.
Celeste line in the chat room says tons of people complain about Coin. I'm sorry. I feel like this is a personal thing. I don't see that a lot. But I also get to ignore things when I think they're dumb because I don't work for Blizzard. So I think Coin is a good example. I think Innervate is a good example. Like Druid has never really had a super strong upside to playing multiple cards or spells. It was just another piece in their ramp puzzle.
Yeah, and right now you're seeing Innervate get a lot of play and them doing crazy big things with Mount Exotic Mount Chick. totally blanking on exactly what the card is called, but and Innervate is coming into play there. But again, that's not a Druid thing, and I think that's a really good example of the potential problem with zero mana cards is because of the design of Kael'thas. There are now some classes that can take huge advantage and be doing things that they want to do in conjunction with this now printed neutral card. And Kael'thas is more problematic in some classes than others because some classes don't have access to zero mana cards to fill in those gaps and then get to the super big zero mana 8 to 10 cost spell like turn, right? Because they don't have those free things to do in the interim to get to that third free spell. So I think that like right now, Druid is seeing a lot of play, or Innervate and Druid is seeing a lot of play because they've got these, you know, spell activators. They've got cool stuff to do with Kael'thas. And it's kind of illustrating that maybe Innervate itself isn't problematic, but it can spiral out of control when you've got it paired with these other combo cards.
Well said. I don't really have much else to add there. chat room is, are you saying Innervate isn't problematic? It got nerfed for a reason. Like, of course, that's not what I mean. Like, of course. But in terms of
but current Innervate, like after it got changed, now it's in a good place. Like it got changed for a reason.
Yes.
Now it's in a better place.
Yeah.
But then combo cards like Kael'thas get printed, and that's when it kind of highlights what happens when you just have zero mana cards.
Yeah. Yeah. Other good examples, I think, are things like Silence or Inner Rage. Those really haven't had massive runaways. Obviously, like there have been times where Silence has been kind of powerful. Things like he's like silencing a watcher that couldn't attack, but again, it's not attacking that turn. Also, it's just a watcher. We've seen way crazier stuff since then. Inner Rage is another one that has just kind of worked out for the most part. Like, yes, it does enable some game-ending things, but usually at that point, you've had enough time to see the Grommash coming. Again, these kind of things that I think overall have played out. And this is what I'm hoping this conversation will spur, is like, thoughts about it. Like, when does it work for things to be zero or extremely cheap? Even if they do play towards a combo, but what is the power of the combo?
Yeah, and I think that zero mana cards in and of themselves, like as they are placed in the game, designed and placed in the game and balance tested, I think are probably going to be okay. And they allow devs to very specifically test and very specifically design. And I think that maybe more so than cards that are innately in the game at a zero mana cost, though I do think you need to be careful with them, I think mana reduction becomes the real conversation here, because when you can reduce things to zero mana, it basically means like anything in the game could potentially be free. And that's where we get these like game breaking combos. And that's where we get, you know, hate around cards like Skull of Gul'dan. And that's where we get hate around cards like Altruis, because they end up enabling things that just aren't fun. And it's not necessarily those specific cards. It's that they are making use of cards that have their own powerful effects and should have a cost to them, that all of a sudden don't have a cost to them. And so you're comboing all these things out and you're getting all of these different effects and you haven't paid for them. And especially when you're looking at something like Skull of Gul'dan giving you potentially like 9 mana's worth of value, it becomes really difficult to play against and to feel good playing against, because you're just like, what is the cost there? What is the cost? And there isn't any. And that can be super frustrating.
Hey, Can we get Lotheb added back in the game, please?
Yes.
Or a Lotheb-like effect. That would be...
Yes.
That'd be delightful. Please, please and thank you. I think you kind of hit the nail on the head there. I think there's still like, I don't think this is by any means a conclusive discussion.
No, not at all.
When zero mana cards feel good and when they feel bad. But it's I know where your brain's been and where my brain has gone with the altruist thing. I've, like, at the end of the day, for me, altruist, like, the face damage is what I'm really hung up on. But we've already talked about that. And I so this is kind of a different angle to approach it from, because it's all compounded by the discounting or the cards just being free in the freaking first place for Demon Hunter with altruist. Like, you know, it certainly seems to me that with these changes, they're not going after the obvious, or things that seem obvious, to us or feel obvious to us. Cause we could be wrong. We could be very wrong. And as any time we listen to the devs talk, like, there's usually multiple answers. There could be multiple right answers, the way to deal with things. You know, maybe it is, like I said, if we're going to be looking at things, at ways to adjust the power level of cards that are maybe not the most obvious thing in the world, maybe discounts, maybe free cards are part of that slightly off the beaten path thing to look at. So let us know what you think. Write in tacpodcast@gmail.com or tweet at us, comment, all that stuff, all that internet stuff for interaction. So with that in mind, we have plenty more to talk about today. At some point, I would like to eat dinner. So let's thank today's sponsor, Quip, who, speaking of eating dinner, helps me get my dinner out of my teeth because they make fantastic electric toothbrushes, and they will send replacement heads and toothpaste and floss straight to your door. Just go to getquip.com/TAC right now. You're also going to get your first refill pack for free with a Quip electric toothbrush. Joss, I'm not a morning person, and as much as I miss shopping right now, I don't miss having to go out and shop for, like, freaking, like, refill toothpaste or to replace the actual nightmare of a brush that my brush becomes because I don't think to replace it. So Quip sending out new brush heads is really nice right now. On top of that, like, I can do it before I have my coffee, which I probably should, because it's like, it's got a built-in timer. It has 30-second pulses. It's like, yo, you should probably change where you're brushing. I would love it if that's actually what it said. Had a little voice.
It's like, yeah. That would be so good. I mean, I like the kind of inobtrusive, just like, bzz, 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 to tell me that it's time to change. But I mean, if I had a little voice being like, yo, just move it now. I'd be totally down for that.
Maybe I could get a custom Murloc sound or just like, oh, la, 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 anytime it's time to change where I'm brushing.
Bully toothbrush.
Yeah. Big fan. You know, keeps me, I don't have to be alert to brush evenly in the morning. That's very nice. Quip also has eco-friendly refillable floss with a dispenser that you keep for life, and expanding stream that helps you clean in between. Not a floss fan, but it reminds me to floss. So go check them out. If you do, go to getquip.com/TAC right now, and you're going to get your first refill for free. That's your first refill for free at getquip.com/TAC. That's spelled getquip.com/TAC. Quip, the Good Habits Company. We thank them for their support. We thank you for checking out getquip.com/TAC. And now, Joss, there is... there were some, like, other nerfs that and buffs that happened. I can actually just, like, look at them right now. I apparently totally effed up the notes and didn't put the other things we didn't talk about. So Bad Luck Albatross went up a mana, cost 4 mana. That was teased last week. Mm-hmm. Friends of filming, blah, blah, blah. We talked about all that. Oh yeah. And then,
Sacrificial Pact changed. So it's still 0 mana, but now, you have to target a friendly demon. So you are no longer able to destroy enemy demons or say Jiraxxus.
That one, you know, after talking a while, Joss, about, like, a lot of these changes didn't seem like they went after the obvious thing. Sac Pact is exactly what I thought they would do.
Yeah,
this is exactly how I thought it was going to be adjusted. So no more, murdering Jiraxxuses or Frenzied Fellwing. Like, I know it seems like it's targeted at Demon Hunter, but multiple other classes also run Frenzied Fellwing. And so Sac Pact just had this extra little upside that was good in a lot of different matchups.
It kind of got this. I mean, between being played in Warlock and being offered from Zephyrs and people playing, like, having the neutral demon that was being played across different classes, like, it just kind of had all of these little things that slowly made it better. And then all of a sudden it was like, oh, wow, Sack Pack is everywhere. Like, this is a card that we've had forever and it's never seen a whole lot of play. It's been very, very niche. And then all of a sudden it was just, well, yeah, everyone plays that. It comes up all the time. Like, wow, where did you come from, Sack Pack?
Yeah, yeah. Well, and also we were seeing a little more because of Zephyrus. And
yeah. Yes, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, to me, I look at just Frenzied Fellwing, and I'm just like, yeah, of course. Why wouldn't you? Just deal with this damn free card that they just got out because they did enough damage to your face. Free cards, y'all. It's almost like there's a theme to today's episode.
Wow.
Yeah, so that doesn't surprise me. But the one buff that we got was to Paladin, Librem of Justice. Now costs 5 mana, down from 6. This is the equip the one attack weapon, set all enemy health to 1. Obviously not the enemy hero. But yeah.
Could you imagine? That's how they would build it if it was in Demon Hunter.
Boy, Joss, a few things have let me down more after a period of extreme hype than Librem Paladin.
Yeah, I tried Librem Paladin like literally day one, and it was easy to build. It was fairly straightforward, and I enjoyed it quite a lot, except that I just died so much. And that was before the first nerf in the first like 24 hours or whatever. Like, it was pre first Demon Hunter nerf, and I was trying to do Librems, and I was like, just let me have fun, Demon Hunters lie.
I think my first three games
hyped up so much
while I was streaming were on Librem Paladin. I lost all three and went, well, this sucks. I moved off, and I only think I played against one Demon Hunter in those three games. It was just, couldn't find a win. So I'm happy to see this. I'm still not sold, especially since we appear to be living in a Murloc Paladin world suddenly.
Yeah, Murloc Paladin is super powerful. Their imprisoned Murloc dude, the one mana play, is really, really powerful.
Yeah, yeah, it's it is rapidly, rapidly rising up the charts. What is it? Imprisoned Sungill. The Imprisoned Sungill. Yes. Boy, I couldn't have been more wrong about Dormant. I thought Dormant was not going to be good. And just felt like, I'm going to spend mana to do nothing for 2 turns. And that just feels bad. But it turns out a lot of these, they're great because you can't.
Well, yeah, some of them are and some of them aren't, right? And the earlier you can play them out, like, I think the ones that are kind of like 1 to 3 mana, Demon Hunter one aside, but the early one, although I will say I haven't seen the Demon Hunter imprisoned guy very often since it was nerfed. The Priestess I'm still seeing, but not the imprisoned guy as much.
I think most decks are still running it, but I don't think they're like rushing to get it out.
Yeah.
As much. I think they're almost, at least in, like when I was playing Temple Demon Hunter this week, I was like, I'm kind of praying they're one of the things that my Skull of Gul'dan hits.
Mm-hmm. So I kind of think like the earlier cheaper ones seem to be getting played because they do have quite powerful effects. For the turn that they awaken, assuming that they're played on curve, then when they do awaken, they're really powerful. And the problem that we were seeing is like you're taking your whole turn. But if you're taking your whole turn 1, 2, or 3 and you're not in a super aggressive meta, it's actually not that bad. So the Paladin one specifically is super good. And the Warlock one also, I think, is really good. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Mage one's seen a decent amount of play as well.
Yeah.
So that's rad. A lot is changing and we're still in the first day of the most recent patch, but I'm not sure one man off Librem of Justice is going to be enough.
We'll see. It's good anyways. It's nice that they're adjusting stuff so soon. Like, again, we've talked about so many times how flexible the team seems to be now. And I mean, they're changing stuff within 2 weeks of launching them. So I think that they're open to making some balance shifts and that's a really good thing.
I agree entirely. So we already talked a little bit about Murloc Paladin. I've played a decent amount as much as one can when I still want to learn nothing from not consistently winning games and deck hop like a crazy person. but it does seem as if Murloc Paladin and Secret Rogue have risen very, very quickly as some of the clear winners of the most recent balance changes. I rather like Murloc Paladin. I've always historically liked Murloc decks. I've never really had a huge thing against them. And I like how
I've come around.
There's an to me, I think there's an interesting amount of similarity and uniqueness between all the different Murloc decks that have existed across time. And very recently, like, it wasn't that long ago that we had Murloc Paladin and Murloc Shaman as like two really solid, like, ladder climbing decks. And they played fairly differently, which, like, so that's a good example of like why I like Murloc. So, and the new Murloc Paladin to me, like, it feels different from recent Murloc Paladins that I have played. A lot of it comes down to the Imprisoned Sun Gill, but also their Omega card, you know, Murgur McGurgle, which it's so hard to say some of these names and inflect them in just a normal sentence.
Yeah.
But like, it's kind of a crazy card. And also Underlight Angling Rod is another new kind of fun way to get your Murloc on in Paladin. And oh, playing Scale Lord. It feels so good. It feels so good to drop a Scale Lord and give all my Murlocs Divine Shield. It's just like, I haven't thought about Scale Lord since we were like, hey, is this going in the Battlegrounds? And it still hasn't shown up. but now that I'm playing with it, once again, I'm going, this card would be disgusting in Battlegrounds, and I hope it never happens.
Yeah, it'd be gross. It would be super gross. Yeah. But I think the difference between Murlocs now and Murlocs previously, because when I say previously, I mean like OG vanilla Hearthstone era, is that they were kind of the go-to only way at that point in time to play a super duper aggressive deck. It's like you put Murlocs in and that was the way to play aggro. And now there's many different ways to play aggressive decks. So it's not only Murlocs, and Murlocs also, like you mentioned, aren't always necessarily even full on aggro. So I think that they've grown as a species. They're evolving, except for not actually, because that's not a card in Standard anymore. But they are becoming more interesting to play, I think. And they're not the only option for any playstyle anymore. And we're getting a lot more cards that are Murlocs, do cool stuff with Murlocs. And yeah, so I think they're more varied now. It's not just a Murloc package in whatever class you want to play aggressively. So I think that's why I've come around on them. I think they're really cool. And I love the theme of Murloc Paladins, period.
The idea of like holy devout fish people.
Yeah, holy devout fish people. Exactly. Yeah.
Very Hearthstone. Like, it's so on brand for this game. It's fantastic. Galakrond Secret Rogue seems to really be picking up steam, so much so that I find myself like legitimately enjoying Rogue. Like, it's a class that every now and then I can come back to, but it's definitely not what I would consider a main class.
This is what I'm playing.
You're playing like Rogue?
This is what I'm playing right now is Secret Rogue.
Oh, y'all. Yeah,
because the secret package they got is really, really cool. I love Bamboozle specifically.
Yes.
Yeah, Joss is playing Rogue, you guys. I mean, Garrett was literally speechless. Like, this is the deck I'm currently playing.
Hell has actually frozen over if Joss is playing Rogue. Rogue is like something I like to dabble in. I would never consider it a main class, but I also wouldn't consider it like one of my least favorites. It's just kind of one that's there that I, you know, every now and then I go and visit. Like, how you doing, Valeria? And Valeria's like, I'm fine. I know you're not my best friend, but it's cool to hang out.
I'm fairly certain I still have less than 100 wins on Rogue, and I 100% don't have Rogue at 60 yet. Like, that's how little I've played Rogue in the history of Hearthstone. Like, I do not touch the class. I haven't historically liked it, but there is something about this secret deck that's just so cool and fun to play.
It's very good. And it's also, it's more straightforward than a lot of historical Rogue decks in terms of its trickiness, even though it's literally running a card called Dirty Tricks. It's a lot more straightforward. The tempo plays, at least to me, seem pretty apparent about like ways that you can just get there with this deck. Obviously, you know, it's still a Galakrond deck. It's still running Heist by Baron Togwaggle. So if you were playing Galakrond Rogue at any point up until now, you're going to immediately pick this deck up because it plays very similarly. It's just now you have Shadow Jeweler Hanar and the infinite Christmas trees of secrets that you can pull off with this that are, I need to sit down and like go through like a spreadsheet or a flow chart of how the shit I am supposed to actually test for a rogue that goes off with an arm.
That's the thing. You can't. You just have to do stuff and hope.
Boy.
And that's kind of the thing about the rogue seeker package right now, is that basically if you play a minion, or if you play a spell, or if you attack a minion, like, the only thing that you can do safely against the rogue seeker package right now, assuming they haven't gone off with Hanar, is hit face. Right? Anything else that you do, and that involves you using either your hero power or a weapon that you've got equipped, or you have to already have a board. But basically the only safe thing to do against rogue secrets is hit face. Everything else is going to give them an advantage. So I really like the design of their secret package right now. So, and then when you mix in the secrets from the other class, it's just like, there's literally nothing you can do without triggering a thing that I want you to trigger.
I even fell into the trap of playing into a counter spell, and I run Hearthstone Deck Tracker. I seriously believe that Hanar was team five going, oh, you like to X off secrets with your deck tracker? We're going to have so many possible secrets in the mix that if you're not paying extremely close attention, you're just going to be like, I don't know, I'm pretty sure already I would test it for this and hope for the best. And that's exactly what I did. I'm like, I could have sworn I already tested for counterspell, and I played right into the damn thing. So it's really cool, and it's all I kind of want to play right now. Mm-hmm. It's just Shadow Driller Hanar is just it's just fun to play. It's I wouldn't say it's necessarily fun to play against, but also, like, this card has five attack. Like, I've seen Demon Hunters choke with ways to answer this card if they don't draw.
You mean,
like,
five health
or five? Did I say five attack? I said five attack.
I was like, what crazy combos are you pulling off that you're giving?
You know what, folks? I'm gonna say words, and I just hope you divine what I mean by the words that exit my mouth. Yeah, it has five health, and I have seen Demon Hunters not be able to deal with it. If Hanar stays on board for two turns, it is bonkers.
It's gross. Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Just bonkers. Take everything you learned about Galakrond Rogue, add in the secret package, and go have a hell of a time. Because it's really, really good. Also, Celestial in the chat room says, if you're not playing Crazed Alchemist with Hanar, you are missing out.
Nice. Secret Rager. Love it.
Nice. Secret Rager.
There's one more deck that I want to talk about too, that I did mess around with a little bit, which is Totem Shaman.
Oh, bless you. Bless you. We can be friends. All right. So Secret Rager is all I want to be playing right now, because I also, like, I want to have the most chance to win. But if there is a deck that is just the target of my love, adoration, it might be my favorite deck in like 2 years, it's Totem Shaman.
Yeah, Totem Shaman is really, really fun. And I think it has enough, like, counterplay, because I've played a lot against it. And it doesn't, when they actually get off all of their combos, when they actually get a big board and they beat me, like, it doesn't feel bad. I feel fine, because, like, I know I should have, played better, played differently, gotten rid of their totems, whatever. Like, I feel like there's some interaction to be had here. And I mean, I've played this deck and lost with it because people have, employed that very strategy. It does take some setup, and I think it's great. It's so fun. I've really, really enjoyed this deck. I'm trying to decide if Totem Shaman is my favorite thing right now, or if it is Mage or Rogue. But, I do find that I have some options of things that I'm really enjoying in the meta right now. Like, I think especially after this round of nerfs, it has improved. And Totem Shaman is one of those decks that's definitely benefited from some of the changes that have come in.
100%. Do you want to know, like, the dumbest thing that I'm super excited about that I never in a million years thought was going to be a thing? That's where you go yes or no.
Yes.
No is also an acceptable answer. Guardian Og Merchant, because of the whole, like, deal one damage when you give a divine shield. And I'm like, it's a shaman deck.
It's
you get the healing
Regis card.
You get the healing totem, and who cares? Like, I love how cute that interaction is with a deck that's built around Totem Shaman. Or shaman totems. I can't talk anymore. My brain is just still thinking about zero cost cards, which, by the way, this deck has four of them, two copies of Totemic Might and two copies of Totemic Surge. Clearly a major offender here. Shaman with their zero cost totem buffing spells.
Yeah. But there's a lot of setup to make those things work. So
yes,
I think they're still okay.
It's
and they're not making more copies of themselves or something. I feel chat room. You weren't listening to my entire conversation.
It's running Splitting Axe, and that's all I have to say about this deck. It's running Splitting Axe, and it wins games.
And this is kind of, I think Totem Shaman is really interesting because it's the kind of thing that we saw little pieces here and there over the expansions getting released. And we kind of would look at it and be very much like Beasterid. You kind of like look at it and go, okay, is this the expansion? Is this the time where Totem Shaman's going to be a thing? And in their little expansion vacuums, we would always look at these totem cards and just be like, ugh. Why are they still trying to push this archetype? Why is this happening? Totem Shaman is never going to be a thing. Move on, move on, move on. And now that we finally have enough tools and we can make use of cards that when we were doing like previous expansion, like talks when we got all the cards released, evaluations, maybe even one would say, but when we were doing all of our card evaluations and looking at these cards, be like, oh no, this is bad, this is bad, this is bad, this is bad. And now that we have all that we have, all the tools come together, and Totem Shaman is actually a thing. It's a good deck. It's fun to play. And now all of a sudden we're seeing cards, like you said, like Splitting Axe. Like when we first saw that card, we were like, psh, gross. Why? And now we're like, yeah, Splitting Axe.
That's, oh God, that's a clip right there. That's a clip. I like your Splitting Axe war cry. Yes. Check it out. Definitely gets both of our seal of approval. Totem Shaman coming to a game of Hearthstone near you. just nasty. Before we move on, there's so many other things to talk about, but those are the decks we wanted to highlight that have kind of risen, out of the shadows, thanks to the recent balance changes. We'll talk more next week. But there were some wild changes that were teased last week. Open the Waygate and Blood Bloom have been nerfed. Open the Waygate used to read cast 6 spells that didn't start in your deck. Reward Time Warp is now cast 8 spells that didn't start in your deck. Reward Time Warp. So you need to cast 2 more spells that didn't start in your deck. Mm-hmm. And then for Blood Bloom, used to cost 2 mana. Now it costs 4.
Yeah, so correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the Blood Bloom change just 100% turns off that combo, I think.
Yes.
You used to be able to combo that with stuff that would allow you to do an OTK with Mechathune, because that was the thing that I really enjoyed playing when it was in Standard. So I think that combo is just gone now. Whereas Open the Waygate, that change still allows you to play that deck. It just takes you a little bit longer, potentially.
Yes. Yes, you've wrapped it up nicely. You can't do the Blood Bloom combo anymore. It's too expensive, but you can continue.
As it stood.
Yes.
Right. I'm sure there's probably still ways to do those things. It just... the old way was very, very specific.
I don't think there's any way to pull off exactly the... it was very specific about the mana that it was used.
Mm-hmm. Bloom was more used for Darkest Hour than Mechathune. Okay, the way that I used it was in the Mechathune deck. I don't play Wild, so...
yeah.
Whatever
yeah.
Darkest Hour shenanigans were going on.
It's very, very specifically used to... yeah, get Darkest Hour played, which is why it was called the Darkest Hour Warlock. So there it is. Go listen to some Darkest Hour while you mourn the loss of that ridiculous combination. So there were also some bug fixes here. The big one, the note on here that I liked is that they specified that Zephyrus has been updated to accommodate the Sacrificial Pact and Glaive-Bound Adept changes. So Zephyrus... is just a never-ending student. I think at this point, Zephyrus is on maybe his like 7th year of college, and I'm pretty sure he originally went for a bachelor's.
I tease. Yeah, I tease. Yeah.
It's good. Good on Zephyrus. And then
there was even, speaking of Zephyrus, and I mean, you guys should go and watch this match of the Invitational anyways. The link is in the show notes. But there was a moment in the Invitational where if Zephyrus had offered, I think, like Windspeaker, but there are some things that just straight up aren't in his pool, then I think Trump would have had lethal, but then he didn't offer it because like Windspeaker should never really be an option, I guess. Like he hasn't learned about Windspeaker. I don't know. But yeah, there was a Zephyrus moment on stream at the Invitational. Was that yesterday? Oh my God. All my days are blurring together, you guys. But yeah, if you missed the Invitational, you should at least go and watch that priest shaman match between it was Trump and I can't remember. Dianne, I think, was his opponent. Anyways, go check it out. Links in the show notes to the time in the Twitch VOD where it starts. Warning, it's a long, long match. We join it in progress, and I think it was still like an hour and a half to 2 hours of the stream. Like, it was a long match, but it was amazing.
Well, if we're doing... I'm already forgetting player's name. If we're doing game recommendations from competitive Hearthstone from the past week, where is it real quick? Let me pull up Grandmasters. If you haven't seen the Warrior versus Warrior game between Bloody Face and who was the guy that kicked ass this weekend? It's a player I'm not as familiar with. And his name is eluding me at the moment. Empanizado.
Oh yeah, he's the new grandmaster from NA.
Oh my God, they're new grandmasters. Their warrior versus warrior game. As someone who has spent a good amount of their time covering Hearthstone, talking smack about bombs and warrior, and how I'm not a big fan. Oh man, did it make for really entertaining Hearthstone watching? Oh
yeah,
go watch the warrior versus warrior mirror. Really good, really good Hearthstone. So. That whole finals actually was pretty freaking solid. I would highly recommend it. So, but we also have Battlegrounds to talk about. Before we do that, we have one more sponsor to thank today, and that is Gabby. I just want you to take a minute and, you know, go check them out over gabby.com/TAC. Jocelyn, would you say that I am a fan of cars?
Ugh.
Not cards, yes. With a D, cars, like no, things cars, with four wheels.
Like zoom, zoom.
Zoom, zoom. Yes. The engine, gas. Unless you have a Tesla, which honestly, they're faster than hell. I think they're pretty rad.
Yeah. So my zoom zoom was obviously very descriptive.
Clearly.
Nailed it.
unfortunately, whether you're in the cars or not, if you have one, you have to deal with insurance. At least I hope you do, especially if you hit me. And Gabby can help you with that. Gabby can help you find and help you make sure that you're getting the best price on your car insurance or your home insurance. So you should definitely go check them out. It's really simple. Like, listen, you know, sponsors, talking points, all that kind of stuff. They mean it when they say this only takes minutes. Like you go in, you sign up, you give them whoever your current insurance provider is for either your car or your home insurance, or you do both, and it will automatically pull your policy. I did this myself. I had Geico. I gave them my info, automatically pulled my policy. And within minutes, they were like, here you go. Would you like to save $218 with Safeco? And then like underneath it was like the next highest in savings and the next highest in savings. And it compares coverage to coverage. So you don't have to sit there and go, all right, well, I'm saving 218, but what am I losing? I wasn't losing jack. It was like everything was the same, coverage to coverage. So you should go check them out. It only takes a couple of minutes. Head on over, take 2 minutes right now, start saving on your car and homeowners insurance, and go to gabby.com/TAC. That is gabby.com/TAC. We thank them for their support, and I thank them for helping me find the best deal on car insurance out there. And now, Jocelyn, are you ready for my favorite bumper? Because it's the newest bumper. Battlegrounds time.
Have a good battle, friend.
It's also my favorite bumper because I got to sneak some Scott in there. There was one more thing.
You saw me dancing.
I did see you dancing, but no one else did because there's a title card up in the way. There was one more thing in the 420 patch, and it wasn't obvious jokes. It was a Milhouse nerf.
Which I think was very much needed because Milhouse was insane.
It was going to happen. I actually rather liked the length of time that Milhouse stayed at the power level that Milhouse was at.
He had his day in the sun.
Yes. I think it's funny. It feels like so much time has already passed, but we've only had Battlegrounds since November. But I feel like with like how quickly Bran disappeared, for example, like I could have seen that happening to Milhouse as well. But I think because of like adding more heroes and adding more hero choices, you know, you weren't seeing Milhouse in every game. It didn't seem as bad to me, as kind of previous overtuned heroes. But if you don't know already, they have changed, Milhouse's, like functionality and his hero power, to go from minions costing 2 gold, refresh cost 2 gold, start with 3 gold, to where minions still cost 2 gold, refreshes still cost 2 gold, but tavern tiers cost 1 more. Also, you still start with 3 gold.
Yes. But the big thing here is that tavern tier cost is the big change. And I think it's like, it's interesting. I haven't had a chance to play Milhouse since this change came in, but it's so intriguing. I love this change. It's so cool. It's like, again, messing with the economy of the mode in a really interesting way so that, you know, you might have saved so much mana, like I don't know, 10 mana, I know, throwing out numbers here, over the course of the game buying cheaper minions. But now with every tavern upgrade, it's going to cost you 1 more. So then you're kind of like spending that mana back again into your tavern tiers instead of being able to buy infinity minions. Like I think this is such an interesting change.
I do too. I think it's really smart. And you know, back when Milhouse got buffed, and I've never been more wrong in my history of being on the Angry Chicken, where I was like, I don't think this is enough. Because I was so focused on the cost of the refresh being the point of weakness for Milhouse. It had never crossed my mind that Milhouse being basically perpetually behind in tavern tier, because of starting with 2 gold back then, how important that was, or also not having the potential upside being able to game the system by starting with 3 gold if you found a token generating minion on your first turn. Those are two things. But to me, I think the bigger thing that really kind of set Milhouse over the top is like suddenly he's really efficient at buying minions and he's just on the same par keeping up with tavern tier levels. And so what they've done here is they've essentially split the difference from old total piece of junk Milhouse that couldn't pick up a top 4 placement to save his life, versus, you know, what we just got away from, which was Milhouse as the number 1 top tier hero, basically since day 1 of his buff, unchallenged since. And it seems to have worked. Now again, it's only 1 day's worth of stats, but I'm looking over at HS Replay right now. There's already been 76,000 games logged since the patch, because I am filtering by the current patch. And as of right now, Milhouse is nestled in 18th place. And there are 34 heroes now, so 17 would be dead middle. So Milhouse is almost dead center. Like, barely.
And his average placement isn't really all that bad either. His average placement now is on par with AFK and Rat King and, you know, ones that people tend to speak of quite highly since they were first introduced. And you see them a lot. They get picked a lot. And yeah, like, so even at, you know, 4.58, that's still, or whoops, sorry, 4.57, that's still a decent average placement. Like that's right middle of the road. Like with the right plays, you can get a win. And if you're not playing him right, or you get super bad luck because you can't refresh as much on him. So if you get just terrible luck, then you're going to have a lower finish. And I think that that's how Milhouse as a hero should work. It was, again, it used to feel like he didn't really have a downside, and now he has a bit of a downside, and it's average. It's kind of averaging things out. It's bumping him down to where he should be. So Yeah, I think this is really good.
Yeah, I felt smart, which I love feeling smart. When I saw the change, I'm like, this is almost like dead middle from where he was to where he went after the buff. I wonder if he's going to land middle of the pack, and at least after a day, that's exactly where he is. He has settled. We'll see what happens with a lot more games logged, but to me, that's cool. Like, and it seems like a really good change, a really smart change. I'm hoping I'm not in my head next week and Milhouse doesn't like fall to the absolute bottom, but.
And this is the first time since pre-Tyrion that we haven't had like one hero at the top. Like Tyrion was the undisputed best hero, like tier S or whatever. And then we had Deathwing up there. Then we had Milhouse up there. There's always been a hero that is the absolute best above tier one, amazing win rate. And now we've got four that are currently, so Deathwing, like I mentioned, Zormu, Rafam, and Daryl are kind of all sharing that space in tier one as sharing that top. And I think that this is a really good, really balanced meta right now. Again, it's been one day, but as far as we can tell, these changes seem to be very positive because it's been a long time since we haven't had something that's been just kind of dominating.
Yeah. And this is why I really like stats-based websites. You know, I like that HS Replay. You can sort by average placement, but there's other things to look at, like placement distribution. So Daryl is currently on the top, but the other thing that's really nice is like seeing the difference between the average placement, because they're all starting to fall pretty close in line with one another. So you've got Dance and Daryl sitting at a 3.8 average placement, Rafam at a 3.9, Nozdormo at a 3.9, and a Deathwing at a 4.0. And then we go down into the 4.1s, 4.2s, 4.3s, 4.0. We have this
What's the actual worst hero now? So we've got the best is Daryl at 3.89. Who's the worst right now?
Galakrond.
Oh, poor Galakrond.
Hey, I was right. I predicted a thing. I said Flurgle's going to go up a little bit. And he did. Because he used to be Flurgle. And now Flurgle has ended above Jiraxxus, but below Illidan. I would have assumed he's better than Illidan. But okay.
But all right. So we're now looking at, you know, Flurgle at 4.9 and Jiraxxus at 4.99. So basically five. Putrescide at basically five. So like it feels like the spread is much closer. Like the average placement used to be very, very wide, and now we've kind of smooshed it down a little bit. So you no longer have those. And I think we got very close to that place with the Milhouse patch. The only outlier was Milhouse himself. And then they've brought that outlier down into line with everybody else. So you generally are, at least it's been in my experience, that I don't feel like my offerings, and as we're also getting more offerings now, if you bought the tavern pass, right? So you're getting four instead of three options of who to play. I don't feel like I've had a bad hero offering in a long time, like since Milhouse was first brought back. And I think that's a really good thing. And I think it contributes a lot to my enjoyment of Battlegrounds, is that I'm never feeling like I'm forced to play somebody who's really bad. And I can always figure out how to make a hero work, with the exception of probably Flurgle. He was so high rolly.
Yeah, I'm still having a very good time with it, even though, you know, I took quite a bit of a break with Outlands launch. But as I said at the top of the show, I was a little worried coming back to it with not much changing that I was going to be bored. But I'm not, you know, and I'm still playing on my European account on my phone, too. And I know I said I was going to buy the Tavern Fest. I actually haven't yet because I've started getting into sim racing on weekends because I just need something different to do on weekends since I can't leave my house. So
did you not get the bundle that included the Tavern Pass?
Not on my European account.
Oh, European account. Okay, sorry.
Yeah, no, I definitely. Oh, please, Jocelyn, please.
I was like,
my
what?
Main account gets everything.
Your main account doesn't have the Tavern Pass?
My main account gets more things than my Chihuahuas, which I love and dote upon constantly. No, it's of course I got the Tavern Pass on my main account. Are you crazy? Crazy.
Okay, sorry.
I just don't trust my connection on my phone, so I play on an off account so I don't get tilted when I get disconnected and lose MMR. I haven't personally had a chance to play Milhouse either. Hasn't been offered to me. But I've played against some Milhouses, and they didn't, you know, anecdotally, they didn't feel that much like lower power to fight against. Obviously, stats say otherwise. They have definitely, millhouses have definitely been brought in line. But yeah, I'm really happy with the spread of average placement on heroes right now. And it just gets even more interesting when you look at placement distribution, because Daryl's on top, but apparently has a really hard time getting first place, which is sure as hell my experience. I've already had Daryl twice since the patch. Both were second place finishes. I could not.
I think I tend to finish second with Daryl too. And I don't necessarily know why that is, but I'm glad that it's not only my experience. I just figured I was failing to find the first place magic and that everybody else just, you know, got super crazy dragon high rolls. But yeah, Daryl is so fun. He has been one of my favorites since he first came out. And I mean, at first it was because he was a super fancy dancing Murloc with a top hat. And I was like, of course I love him. But over time, as I got to play him, as I learned how to play him, then it started to become more than just a superficial love affair. And Daryl, I am so happy that you are on top of Battlegrounds.
Yeah,
he's
it,
great.
It feels good. And then right below him, Rafam, who's like really close, like neck and neck for vying for that top spot. Much less consistency in like second through fourth place, but like extremely high first place finishes for Rafam, which I haven't looked at my stats in a while. I bet Rafam is my most first places.
I think Alexstrasza is my most first places.
Really?
Yeah.
Alexstrasza always
really
gives me
like her
absolute shit every time I get Alexstrasza. Well,
I think with Alexstrasza, the key is kind of not to lean too far into that turn five or tier five turn. Like her hero power shouldn't necessarily be your be all end all. You still need to kind of play the game. But yeah, I don't know. I really enjoy playing her and I tend to have good luck with her, I guess. I don't know. I get good finishes. I really like playing her. She's probably outside of Daryl, she's probably my favorite in Battlegrounds right now.
Wow. Yeah. Alexstrasza is one of my absolutely favorites to play. I think the hero power is just not fun. And I'm never hashtag never lucky with Alexstrasza.
Well, and you know, this is kind of like to cap off our entire day of conversation, like this Alexstrasza conversation kind of just nails it, right? Because it's like, for me, she's my favorite. She's the most fun. And for you, you hate her. She's not interesting. You don't like her. And
probably my least favorite designed hero.
Yeah. And it's my favorite. And so I don't envy the Hearthstone team trying to create this game and balance things, given that two people who, you know each other really well, like playing a lot of the same kind of games, you know, can have totally wildly differing opinions on what is fun. It is so so subjective. I don't envy them trying to figure out how much of the game should be aggro, how much of the game should be combo, how much of the game should be control, because fun is different for everybody. So as much as like I am hating Demon Hunter, there's a lot of people really enjoying playing that class. So, I mean, yeah, like I do not envy them trying to figure that out. I think they've done a really good job in Battlegrounds specifically, because I'm having fun playing the hero that I like. You're having fun playing the heroes that you like. And neither one of us feels like we are being negatively impacted by the other, right? Like, you know, if there's an Alexstrasza in your lobby, does that really hurt your experience?
100%, because they always get Caligos.
Well, yeah, sorry, but sorry about your Garrett luck, Garrett.
That's okay. It's my fault that I always pick her, because I have quite a few Alexstrasza games under my belt because I almost always just pick based on average placement. And Alexstrasza has a pretty decent one. So
yeah. Too bad there isn't a column for like personal average placement. Like, how well do you know this hero? Because then Alex would just be at the bottom and you could be like, no, I shall not get tricked by you, you temptress.
Again, not sponsors, but HS Replay they're kind to us and send us stats and stuff. That might be coming soon, Jocelyn, to HS Replay anyway. That might be coming soon. You might be able to see just how terra bad you are with certain heroes that you might be picking a lot.
Oh man, yeah. I feel like Rafam for me, that's I'm not great with him. But anyways.
Oh, we need to, if there was a way we could guarantee that you would get some Rafam games, I would be happy, 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 happy to Jedi Master you in some Rafam games. Cause I love Rafam. I haven't had Rafam offered in a really long time. And I love playing Rafam. I love feeling like I'm cheating, and it feels like I'm cheating when I'm playing Rafam. So, but anyways, there you have it. There's the Milhouse nerf in a nutshell, and kind of how the rest of the meta is shaking out. Really, nothing has changed for the most part. Like everything that was next in line under Milhouse, they're still more or less in the order they were before. So now Daryl is on top. But I think there's a really good spread on average plays from one hero to the next, and a really cool like mix up of where they tend to finish games at. So, and like you said, I've been really happy with Battlegrounds and what they're offering, and I'm never bored, which is a good feeling. I dig it. And you know what else I dig, Jocelyn? Emails. So let's do that now, shall we?
Hello.
Hello, it's me.
Hello.
Just quickly, do you get my message?
Yep.
Oh.
Hello.
You can send your emails to tacpodcast@gmail.com. If you're a patron, you can drop us a question directly in the patron Discord. You can skip the inbox entirely. Rakamar wants to know, every set has a cute art somewhere, but amongst all of them, which one is your favorite? And to this, I would like to add, Jocelyn, we somehow got out of the entire card reveal season that I believe lasted a whopping 30 minutes for Ashes of Outland without you dubbing the most coveted award. If you are a Hearthstone card, this is the award you want to win. Jocelyn's own cutest card award. So first off, from Outland, what do you think the cutest card is?
So Outland specifically, it's definitely Replicatotron. Okay. It's the neutral. And I will say it was quite difficult to pick one out of Outland because there wasn't a whole lot of cutesy. They kind of really went hard into the like more serious Warcrafty Outland aesthetic. And there weren't a whole lot of traditional like big-eyed cutie Hearthstone cards, but this one I love him so much, and he's like picking up Annoyatron's little squeaker and he's like, what's this for? I have this whole story in my head for this card that I love him. I think he's super adorable and cute.
you have a taste, Jocelyn, and it's very consistent.
I do. I have a very, very specific taste. I will say that there were some really good runners up in this set too that came very, very close until I saw this little mech guy. Dark Glare, I don't know why, but that card just, it's kind of cute. Yeah, the taste is Matt Dixon. I love Matt Dixon. His art is amazeballs. But yeah, like, I don't know why. There's something about him that just looks so adorable. He looks like, oh, I'm trying to be super badass, but really, he's so cute.
He's got about 1,700 teeth, and they're fighting for each other for gum position, and axes stuck on his tentacles.
But can't you just see him, like, going like this to you?
I could see him trying to eat me.
1,000 eyes.
like the Dilophosaurus in Jurassic Park before it eats Nedry, because that's what you just pantomime.
Yep.
Oh my lord. Oh yes. God.
Jocelyn. I like Dark Glare. Also, I like Vivid Spores a lot, and I like just in general. And I think I mentioned this when we were talking about the card. Expansions in general, or the card expansion in general. I like the aesthetic of the little Spore Regar guys from Zangarmarsh. I think they're really, really cool. So Vivid Spores, I think, is probably the cutest of all of those cards. But that definitely a runner up. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Well, that's incredible. Well, do you have a cutest of all time?
Cutest of all time. I mean, Tiny Finn is probably it, right? Like the golden version of Tiny Finn even had like the little like hearts and stuff. Like you don't get any cuter than Tiny Finn of all time in all Hearthstone. I remember people were like, oh, Snowflipper Penguin. I'm like, psh, get out. Like, look at that face.
Okay, so I really do like penguins a lot. But I'm with you. I would
Snowflipper Penguin didn't even come close.
Would have said Tiny Finn. Yeah, Snowflipper Penguin could be cuter in its stylization. Tiny Finn is absolutely insane. I have a real soft place for Murlocs.
I kind of feel like in general, like Murlocs, because there was also Mergur Mergurgle and Furious Felfin from Outland that were also on my list of like contenders for cutest Outland card. And something.
Mergur gets the award for the most badass. Mergur is ready to like rip your limbs from their sockets.
So hard. I think that's it. Is just I can see how hard these little Murlocs are trying to be like their idols, like Tyrion, and you know, like I love when you put a little tiny Murloc, and same with Furious Felfin. Like he just wants to be Illidan so bad, but he's a little tiny Murloc. Like there's something about Murlocs that is absolutely freaking adorable. Obviously, Tiny Finn. There's also been Tasty Flyfish, I think is what it was called. It's the Murloc that's got its butt held up by balloons. That's also adorable. There's something about Murlocs. There's also I think it was like called Lumi or something from, I think it was Boomsday. It was a one mana mech card, and it's just like its head was like a light bulb.
Oh God! What one? What was that? It was like
Lumi. Lumi. Oh, Lumi. Yeah, I'm Lumi. Spelling it Lumi wrong. Is also up there.
That's where I couldn't find it. Okay. Yeah. This guy.
Yeah, that guy, Faithful Lumi. That's it. I'm like, I knew it had a longer name, but yeah, Faithful Lumi.
Yeah, that one is pretty damn cute.
Yeah, he's pretty cute.
Will probably shock you or burn the skin off of your leg when it tries to hug you from the heat. but hopefully there's some LED technology happening here and we don't need to worry about being emitted from Faithful Lumi. Cause I just want to hug it.
And then, I mean, finally, we also have to give an honorable mention to a card that isn't even a card, but we've seen a lot of them recently because they are in Battlegrounds. The Tabby Cat token off of the Alley Cat, like Alley Cat can GTFO, but Tabby Cat is adorable. It's probably the most adorable beast in the game.
Yeah, I mean, the other cat is just like, we've all had a cat in our lives that was like the jerk, where you're just like, you know, I'm supposed to love all my pets, but you're definitely my least favorite. And that's the token generating cat.
That's the Alley Cat, yeah.
That's Alley Cat. And then there's Tabby Cat, which is your favorite cat. That's the cat that you would die for.
Yeah.
You know, if it got cornered by a raccoon, you're going to go to fisticuffs with that raccoon to save.
Honestly, in Battlegrounds, I don't even know if this is strategically the right thing to do, but I always sell the Alley Cat before I sell the Tabby Cat. I will not sell the token. I don't even care if it's strategic.
Sure. Yes. I did a lot of Rafam given the option because a lot of people will put the Tabby Cat first. So I'm upping my chances to find it's a triple a token instead of tripling the token generator. But anyways, well, Jocelyn, I feel left out. I feel really left out. So I was wondering if I could bestow an art award.
I would love to hear what you think is art award worthy, since, you know, you have a background as an artist, like you're a very artsy person. Like, okay, what is the Garrett Art Award? Is even in your, it's your Twitter handle, but what is your Garrett Art Award? Is it like most technically sound? What about like best animation for a golden?
I don't have enough goldens to consider myself an expert on that subject, and I don't spend a lot of time looking at goldens that I don't have. Well, Jocelyn, we are here after Ashes of Outland, and I was just thinking, if there was ever a time to dole out the most emo card award, now is the time. And it was, I gotta say, some stiff competition. in Ashes of Outland. First I thought it might have been Rustworn Cultist. It's got a bunch of spikes and purple robes hanging out with an imp. It's all hunched over. It's like, I hang out in the back of the high school class and I carve the Nine Inch Nails logo into the desk. Leave me alone. There's the Sky's Wanderer who's just wearing a cloak, looking super creepy. Taron Gorfiend. It seems like a no-brainer. I mean, Taron Gorfiend wearing a hood, covered in spikes, riding like an undead steed thing.
I thought he was the go-to because, I mean, I'm pretty sure I can even see his like dark black eyeliner. Like, he's got some emo.
He's got some
emotions he has to deal with. Yeah. Got some feelings.
Greyheart Sage is like sitting there all emo, sipping a glass of wine, or I guess a wooden goblet of wine with their hood up. Actually, like totally looks like an emo kid hanging out at the local cafe, listening to some terrible spoken word act.
This has got why me written all over it.
Yeah, but the I've decided that the most emo card from Ashes of Outland, it turns out, is actually Enhanced Dreadlord. Because Enhanced Dreadlord, one of Enhanced Dreadlord's eyes has the crow makeup. It's got like straight up like running black tear, pink dyed hair, a midriff with like red fringe. Like, Enhanced Dreadlord is so emo, it hurts. Like Enhanced Dreadlord.
I can see that.
Definitely is wearing a My Chemical Romance shirt under that breastplate. Without a doubt.
I mean, who doesn't?
Without a doubt. And every time it dies, it just thinks to itself, how could this happen to me? That's it. It's Enhanced Dreadlord. Your most emo card of Ashes of Outland, everybody. I really thought it was going to be a Demon Hunter. I really did. Didn't think it was going to be a Dreadlord, but here we find ourselves. With that in mind, Joss, I think that wraps up another episode of The Angry Chicken. I hope you all enjoyed it. Keep the emails coming, tacpodcast@gmail.com. As previously mentioned, you can also drop a message in the Discord if you're a patron. Speaking of which, thank you so much to our patrons for supporting us over at patreon.com/TAC. If you like our podcast and you would like to support us, and you can support us, that's the best way. Every little bit helps, from the producer to all of our $1 patrons. Thank you so much, because it all adds up and allows us to put the effort in this show that we do. Also, huge thanks to our producers, now that I've mentioned them, Declan H and Cheesy Bob. Thank you so much for your support. If you want to catch more Anger Chicken, you want to catch up on the back catalog, maybe find some show notes, head on over to amove.tv. Every episode ever made is posted over there. You can also find clips and links to the full VOD archives over at youtube.com/amove.tv. Jocelyn, before we go, your life isn't just Angry Chicken. Where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter and Twitch. I'm at Joss Plays. That's J-O-C-E Plays. Getting back into streaming now that I'm in this working from home life. So yeah, we've been playing some Battlegrounds, been playing some Constructed. Might probably go back to some Dead by Daylight soon. I've been playing some of that off air, but you know, I always play Dead by Daylight. It's kind of an obsession. But anyways, yeah, so go in and follow the Twitch stream.
One of these days, I'm going to stream myself crashing the walls while I learn how to sim race. I haven't started that yet. I would like to not be a complete ball of suck when I flip the camera on. Folks, you can find me on Twitter @GarrettArt. All of the shows that I do, this one included, can be found over at amove.tv. I just recorded a brand new WoW killer this morning with Taliesin. We talked all about Torghast. Seriously, we talked for almost 2 hours about nothing but Torghast.
Wow.
Yeah, I really like it. And as I said there, as I am a grumpy old man when it comes to new things in WoW. I tend to not like new things in WoW. I just want to run dungeons and raid. And when you add things like Warfronts or scenarios in Pandaria, or you add island expeditions, I hate them. I don't hate them. I just don't really want to interface with them. But Torghast, that's something. I'm really impressed by what I've seen so far. And if you'd like to hear my thoughts on that, go download the latest episode of WoW Killer. We're also doing Let's Talk About Star Wars Weekly again, as the Clone Wars enters its final 4 episodes ever. And I would argue possibly the best any Star Wars thing I've ever seen. The most recent episode was amazing and made me well up like a Pixar movie multiple times. And there's also Into the Nexus for Heroes of the Storm. Just go to amove.tv. It's got all of this. amove.tv. Check it out. Go subscribe to all the podcasts and get caught up on all of your favorite Blizzard and nerdy outings. Go check it out. That's going to wrap it up for this episode of The Angry Chicken. Until next time, job's done.
Job's done.
Done.
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.